You're supposed to say the lines.
Oh, is it? I gotta say that?
Yes.
Public service announcement. Using opinions or other opinions.
Fuck that bullshit. They are my opinions. And my guests. No one else's. Remember, this show ain't for chitlins' ears. So listening discretion and viewing discretion is advised. This is a paranormal horror crime show. So the scenes and the sounds could be a little terrifying to those little ears and those little eyeballs. And of course, there's obviously cussing. I mean, it's me. Please don't do anything that these stupid-ass people do in podcast. This is for entertainment purposes and for you guys to listen with your ears. Consume the knowledge. And now, time for the show. Subscribe, follow, you know the drill. Wherever you watch, wherever you listen. And thank you so much for your support. What's up, everybody? It's Sharna with Exploring the Paranormal Perspective. I want to first and foremost give a thank you to the fantabulous Booth brothers, Christopher St. Booth and Philip Adrian Booth. Thank you guys so much for doing this interview with me. This is a pre-recorded interview, and I would like to let everybody know that it was very awesome to sit down with these two busy guys and get all the information I got from them. I cannot wait to get them back on the show, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey. Hello.
Hello. Hey,
you colorful unicorn, you.
Oh, there we go. Hi.
Hi.
Ow, howdy.
How, hi, hi,
hello.
Hi. Oops, how are you two gorgeous gentlemen?
It was good. Didn't you hear? Really, really, really busy.
I know. Thank you for taking the time to spend with me.
How are you doing?
I am doing fantabulous. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to spend with me. I've been trying to get you two for so long, and I know you guys have been busy, so I want to say thank you first and foremost.
Oh, of course, we want to do this. It's exciting.
Well, you two have been in the spooky stuff for a little while since the Playboy era, after the Playboy era stuff. What got you guys into the supernatural?
There is a lot of difference between nipples and ghouls. I do have to put that to the point. We had worked, just for people don't know, we had worked for the Playboy entertainment industry in Europe for a while, but it was, we only did the stuff you forwarded fast through. Mm-hmm. It's the artsy stuff that we did.
The story content.
Yeah. So like when it came to all the, you know, the racy stuff, we actually left the room. We were only there to make their movies to look as real as one could possible with their budget. So
the idea was for them back then was the whole industry was they were selling their content to the, if you guys remember Cinemax, and Cinemax had to have story and production value, and they couldn't cross that market over. So they hired us to give them that erotic thriller term, as they called them back then. So they could able to sell them in two ways, and they would have their X-rated stuff or the adult stuff, the sexy stuff for the Playboy channel. And then they would have the edited version with all the story and just nudity. Cinemax.
That's what we did.
So that's how that. So y'all stayed on while it was classy.
Won't be that exactly. Most people didn't see what we did because they forwarded phones.
Yeah, it's a funny thing because we still get people, you know, people, those YouTube warriors love to, you know, find something we buried in IMDb and say, you know,
oh,
hey,
my gosh,
you guys are porno actors. And I'm saying,
porno actors.
Porno actors.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's clarify that. We were a band on stage in a club. That was about the whole extent of that scene.
When we were in a movie, we were a rock band.
Yeah, we were never in it. Just because we're in the movie as a band in the club, that's about it. Because you know, people love to bring that up, like, you know,
like it's dirt.
Like it's
stuff.
Something that on dirt or something. I have
no, you were right. We were there when, you know, it was more artsy and classy before it became all self-based camera internet stuff.
Right.
We actually, at the end of Woody and Anastar, we actually helped Playboy launch their satellite up in the air because of the quality of our stuff. Because it was very high end. Each budget was about $250,000.
Wow.
But anyway, to answer that question, we got tired of it. And as that industry changed, we were doing it for money because with the money that we supported our own, you know, dreams, our own films, we put our money. So we saved all that money up and made our first horror movie, which Dark Place with Matthew McCrory. So, from Devil's Week.
Yeah,
we totally.
Half of a thousand.
Well, it's Pugh M.M.
Yeah, he played Tiny, which he was an amazing guy because he's a giant, and he was such an amazing guy to work with him. And we had the only film that he actually got to speak in, and he was so proud of himself that he got actual talking role. That's Dark Place.
Look, he's a beautiful man. He was. He was truly beautiful.
Which is going to be, which has just got picked up by Amazon and Apple TV.
Yeah,
I did see that. It's on my watch list.
That's called Dark Place.
And it's that movie won is the Independent SAG Award for Independent Script. And that was the first feature film we did. And to answer your earlier question, that got investors interested into Death Tunnel. So when we made Dark Place, they came to us to make Death Tunnel. And Death Tunnel, we went to make a movie for Sony, which is a great film, shot at Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Oh. But we didn't have any paranormal experience per se. We were there just to shoot a teenage horror movie. But so much stuff happened while shooting that real movie, shooting the movie, that we could not. And to give you a little story for your viewers, I was shooting a scene where a girl walks down the hallway in a nightie. Of course, it's a horror movie. So she's walking down the hallway in a nightie with the flashlight. Hey, guys, it's not funny anymore, you know. Anyway, I feel like a bag of ice walks through me. And Keith Age, good old Hyde Keith, said, well, that's what always happens when a ghost walks through you. And I went, yeah, sure. You're just getting a movie to shoot a horror film, right?
Right.
However, when I went back to look through the lens, there was a thin film of ice on the front. And when I went back to edit it for Sony, there was an image of a little girl blurred, standing right in front of the camera. True story. And you can see all those stories on The Unseen, which is on our YouTube channel, too.
YouTube channel, yeah.
So, and then Chris had, would you please tell us, well, the experience in the Death Tunnel was mind-blowing.
We went down to Waverly Sanatorium to shoot this horror movie, and we went there to scout where the cameras and the lighting would go, right? Mm. And when I got down there, I got to the bottom of the tunnel, and I turned around on the rest of the crew had moved on to a different direction.
He left him in the dark.
He left me at the bottom of the tunnel. And I went, okay.
No.
And then I turned around and I felt this horrific, oppressed feeling. It was really just something I've never felt before. And I felt there's something very terribly wrong and down there. And something just horrible happened. And I had this intuition to pick up the camera I was taking pictures with and take a picture right in front of me. At the same time, I had a video camera on my side that was hanging there on a strap.
To do behind the scenes?
Yeah, to do behind the scenes. And it was running video and I put it down. And I got so just overwhelmed that I ran up to the top of the tunnel, 500 feet, right? So when I got to the top of the tunnel, I threw up. I can't stand it. Didn't think too much about it, really.
Yeah.
But when I got back 2 weeks after, back to Los Angeles, I looked at these pictures that I had taken and the video footage, or the audio that was on the video footage was just dangling as I was running. It was a picture of a little girl standing right in front of me, and she had no eyes at all.
Oh, God.
On the camera audio, there was a scream, and it wasn't me. It was a scream.
Oh.
And I went, wow. And that was it. I wasn't hooked into the paranormal.
So you heard it out loud as well as...
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No, I just felt something horrible happening. And I just started taking pictures. Thank you. And, you know, in the dark and dew with the light coming in from the holes in the tunnel. And then the video recorder was always running. And I had captured all this, and then we were very intrigued. And at that point, I went through every picture looking, oh, what else is out there? And we caught all kinds of crazy.
We shot the sound man on a movie set. As everyone well knows, they always yell at what part of quiet don't you understand? They're really specific on getting dead quiet. And filming a scene in Waverly Hills in, I think, the basement area where they were locked in the cell. This is Death Tunnel, which is on Amazon and Apple Plus.
And too. Voodoo.
And Voodoo.
Yeah.
I was editing the film, and it sounds like someone dragging a bed, an iron bed, across the floor. Yet nobody in the crew is responding to it, and no soundman is telling anyone to be dead quiet.
Oh,
and on
wow.
the actual audio, you hear this dragging, like a bed dragging across the floor, somebody trying to get out or something, or freaking out. And the really cool part, gives me chills talking about it, is you look at it and it's loud as day on the audio, and the sound's not responding to you. The actress is still acting, but the waveform is non-existent. How is that even possible that you can hear it, but
right?
There's no waveform?
That
and
is
that was
crazy.
Yeah, that Waverly's was really big on getting us in.
I think that
they're doing Spooked. You
right.
know, I know the.
So you're into the paranormal heavy, and I think for everybody that's listening to it that's in the paranormal, not even in it. Once you get, and I call it a blessing, to get invited into by seeing something or feeling something, or, you know, even capturing, you know, EVP shadows, whatever you may be, it's almost a blessing that you get that chance to get something that's a class A, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're hooked. You can't, if you truly, especially empathic, you can't walk away, because now you know there's another world out there. And it's so intriguing,
it
you know?
Is amazing. It's like whenever I went to Ashmore Estates with you guys that one time, and I told you, and I was leaning over the rail and I was feeling nauseous. I didn't realize what it was, because I've never felt that way before. I've never had an entity interact with me in that sort of aspect before.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you were telling me about what happened on the third floor and how that lady got pushed down the stairs, and I had the urge that I was going to get pushed, it kind of had me thinking, because I've been wanting to really get more involved in the paranormal and try to get the spirits to feel welcome and come to me and talk to me if they need.
Well, they places have a way of reenacting the residual out, mm-hmm. especially if you're not, if you're weak or you're susceptible, and you could fall into that trap, kind of like the John Cusack's movie 1408, which I think is one of the best reenactments of ghosts constantly jumping out of that window, and he's just sitting there witnessing the residual, the circle, until there's a change. Someone comes in and helps say, stop, you know, you've moved up, move on, you are dead now, or even entertain the idea why it happened, and you know, it did happen. Like in Waverly, all they wanted to do was get a cure.
Yeah.
So do you ever think they're just wandering until someone says, look, guys can leave.
Please. Yeah, found I think cure. What's fascinating about that movie is we didn't really, when we were writing the script, there had to be a reason why the ghosts were there, why they were haunting the place. It's just not enough. It's haunted, but why?
Right.
And so we came up with the concept that they'd wake up in their beds and their neighbor, their other bedmate, was gone. And you know, we know most people know that they put them down the death tunnel so they would hide, they would lose morale and see people dying, so they would never have a hearse pull up at the front. So they had that secret tunnel built where they wheeled the bodies to the train.
Right.
And we came up with the concept for the script through doing the investigation and having like hearing things. And I said, well, what happens if they told the people, oh, well, they went home, they were cured. because we couldn't find any dirt on Waverly Hills when we went to the Louisville Historical Society. But we're writing a script, so we're trying to get research. So we said, well, this hospital back then was costing $1,300 a year, which is a lot of money back in those early years. Well, if they said that tuberculosis was not curable, who would go there, right? So we said, we made Incurable, which is appears on the mirror in the movie. And we said, that's what they would. And we did the freezing, how they were frozen. It was frozen on their porch where they put them out in the middle to get air. And when we released the movie, right when we were doing Spooked, we started getting letters from the grandchildren of the people that were actually there, the grandparents that were actually in Waverly. And they said, our grandfather wanted to tell you that what you said in that movie was true.
Oh, my God.
So that was really amazing to get the letters coming in from the movie Death Phone. Yeah,
still to this day, we get letters about the nurse, you know, on 502 and all that. And saying, yeah, that happened, or this is not correct, this is what happened. But basically, a lot of people call it the most haunted place in the world. And I might agree with them on that. It's definitely the most haunted place.
We had a nurse on the roof who was reenacting one of the nurses that jumped off the roof. Because she was pregnant and unmarried, which was a shameful thing. And then she was fearful the baby in her had TB. So that was what the story was. So we took her on the real place where she allegedly jumped, the real nurse, which put the actress there in the little 1920s outfit and took a 45-foot scissor lift up the side of Waverly. She would really jump off of the roof onto the scissor lift, 5 feet hidden below the camera. So we were shooting that scene, and she jumped. She was all crying. It was amazing. She jumped, and she landed on the scissor lift. Everybody applauded and said, oh, that was amazing. And she just looked like she'd seen a ghost, and she just said to you, you don't understand. I didn't jump. I felt like I was pushed.
Oh, my God.
And we said, by making our movies there, imprinting the real energy, we're becoming supernatural detectives. We're imprinting the energy. So it made us start thinking, are the ghosts really telling us that she never did jump, that she was pushed. Mm-hmm. And this stuff is coming through in our film.
Wow. Oh, my God.
There's a lot of backstory on how we got into the paranormal because of that.
Last night at Soho, it was an investigation. Mm-hmm. They were ghosts trying to solve the mystery. You know, you think about the spirits where they're filming and we're hoping for them to write the story and write the script. And they're actually telling us which direction to go in our movies or documentaries. They write the script.
Yeah, through our evidence, they write their own parts. Through their EVPs on the investigation, we write what they're saying, so we give them a voice through our films.
Wow.
You know, so
did
that's
you both
kind of
write?
Yes, both of us write.
Oh my gosh, y'all have so many parts.
but we base our writing off of all the research and the investigative reports, eyewitnesses, and you know, history, the documented history we can find. And then, of course, we do touch the legend.
We're big on history. If anybody's seen our films, they know that we're really big on research. Some of our films have taken, like, Children of the Grave, which is on, just hit Apple TV and Amazon and Tubi now. Took 2 years to make. We just don't bang them out because we try to get many, many paranormal groups to have consecutive evidence. So we're not going off an urban legend or a myth. We're trying to go with what a common sighting is, and then we investigate that. And
it's like you start the legend out, then you go there, and then without being biased, but then you start getting proof that it was that, you know, concept or was another concept. But I've always find the story behind the story far more scary than the story you're wrapped in the first place. Because like the Waseca Wonder, and say in the movie The Possessed that we did, which is also on Amazon and Tubi. It's about children being possessed, but it goes into the first reincarnation or possession in 1878 in Waseca, Illinois. And it talks about how an 18-year-old girl possessed a 13-year-old girl from in the same prison cell that she died. And she possess this little girl in Waseca, Illinois. And when you just start putting all this together, it's truly overwhelming. But looking for the evidence, when I was doing the research, I found out that some of their family were the sheriffs of that town, and they were hanging people, little boys, and put a bowling oven to torture him. These are the things you start finding out going through all the newspaper archives. So I'm like, wow, that really happened. That guy was not as good. He was the mayor of the county or whatever. And then you found out why he held a lynch mob. And, you know, you start finding other things about these stories and going like, oh, yeah, it's weird because it's a good point, Chris, but I was about paranormal investigation focuses, I think, which is fine if that's what you're into, much on finding spirits and ghosts. But we have to realize once you stir that up, if you're really listening or you've done enough research to find out, you might find out something you don't want to find out. And when you're doing this and putting it on networks, they don't necessarily really like some of the stuff you find out where the ghost might be there. And that's the challenging part, because there's a lot of stuff that happened that is not stuff that's network friendly. And today's paranormal world is just basically, oh, wow, did you hear that? Whoa, it's cold in here. And that's about all you get. But if we're paranormal investigators, or if we're taking it seriously, we become supernatural detectives in a way. We're going to uncover why that person died, why that person is still feels a message needs to be heard, unfinished business, so to speak, because they're here for a reason. And the more tragic a haunting is, the more obviously tragedy it happened there that embedded, you know, like the smell of burnt toast, or a smell that you can't get rid of no matter how much you try to in your room, it stays there. So the more violent or the more tragic something has happened, that haunting, you know, is going to be ugly when you find out what happened.
Right.
You know, and networks don't necessarily want to dwell on some of this stuff that happened back then that was more common day. But I mean, I think for us, we've always wanted to tell the truth, that we told the truth, saying children grave with the city of 99 children buried in a mass grave, and you know how certain states want to bury that, and the asylums all being turned into a bed and breakfast for you. They don't want you to know that the torture chamber was right underneath where you sleep, and we find those torture chambers, you know. And I think that people have a right to know. The Attached is a really good example of that, which is our latest new release, which is, again, sorry to be so shamelessly plugging, Amazon.
This is for you guys.
Yeah, so yeah, Apple, Amazon, and Tubi was the case of Rebecca, who hasn't seen that film yet. It's mind-blowing because there was a pregnant woman who was admitted into an asylum, and she had a stillbirth, and she became suicidal when they took the baby away. So she snuck back into the morgue and got the baby, and she hid it in the cubbyhole in her cell, in her room, and used to rock it at night. And they had... it's very sad. And they had a thing when she would tap on the pipes of the patients to let them know that the orderlies had made their rounds so she could bring the baby out. It was the only thing she was living for anymore. Well, they found her one day, and they took the baby out, and she hung herself in the bathroom. And when we took an SLS up there, and you guys have to see The Attached to see this footage, because it's the most mind-blowing evidence we've ever captured, is an SLS camera, we'll geek out for a second, is touch and go. A lot of people see it jigging and doing the dance in the hallway and all that. Yeah. Well, that really has no relevance to what actually happened. So we did all kinds of false negative tests with the SLS. We got the people. Everything was good. Well, I shone the SLS, and it's live on this show, The Attached. You can see it happen. And we got a figure appearing of somebody putting something in and out of the cubbyhole in her cell. And if that wasn't shocking or creepy enough or sad enough, it wasn't a minute later that a little figure appeared in the cubbyhole of the baby. And we have two SLSs, which is almost impossible to get if you want to debunk this stuff. The people are really into paranormal. And it was a tragic event. Like we talked again, looping over and over time. Oh my God. It was only visible by the thermal imager. We were so blown away by that. We sent that to Bill Chappell, who digital dowsing, who makes all those incredible devices. And he said, Philip, look,
If that's what you got, it's not going to create a small figure. If it's not a small figure, and it's not going to create an event that happened. It's like I said earlier in this, if it's jigging and doing the dance has nothing to do with the tragic event, then it's like, okay, what's going on? But the fact that it just captured that tragedy only, didn't see her sitting here doing walking, but only that tragic event. And that's all that looped over and over.
She hung herself on the shower rod, and we also had the figure hanging there, dangling.
So there you go. So, and I think what's fascinating is people who see spirits or apparitions like we did in Death Tunnel, it doesn't take 30 seconds or a minute before your mind starts talking you out of what you saw. Logic kicks in, and oh no, maybe I saw that. And by the time you tell somebody, there's that shadow of a doubt in there, and they go, yeah, whatever. But if you can capture it on a device like that, it's really hard then to say, okay, well, I didn't see it. You know, and what's really crazy is you can have two SLS. This is what's so cool. You can have two SLSs back to back shooting the same thing, and one SLS may not capture it where the other one does. Now, we have to make sure that the same exact model, that there are different models, not as sensitive. You can have two back to back, but that means it's personal to the viewer. That means their belief system and what they're capturing is a big part of it. You sure you're capturing it on a device that you can go show somebody, but it's your own belief in seeing it that is helping make that happen. And people have to realize that ghost hunting, if you don't believe it, you're not going to see it.
No,
it's all part of that afterworld, that spiritual missing realm, that connection that we have. It doesn't matter what cool gadgets you have. If you don't believe it,
you kind of get it out once you go in for it. It's like a Ouija board. If you're looking for negativity, you're going to get it. If you're looking for positive, you're going to get it too. The only problem with talking to the other world is you don't know really who you're talking to, you know?
Right.
You call it down a little, you try to talk to a little girl, and it could be an evil manifestation disguising that. Yeah. You know, everybody goes to Ashmore looking for Elvis Skinner, the girl who died in the fire, or Joe, the guy who died on the railroad tracks, but they never go in there feeling, well, maybe there's other entities that are making themselves think that you're a little girl. So it's quite an interesting thing. And the more knowledge and more research you get, the more you get a little more savvy to understanding how that works.
Oh man, it is amazing. I've been doing this for a little over a decade, and it is amazing when you find something that just blows your mind. It's absolutely amazing. Especially,
what do you do with it? You know what? That's the thing. Once you open that door, I mean, the thing about it is, there's so many ghost hunting shows, which is wonderful. Paranormal is bigger than ever, but there's so many shows that go in there, and it's half an hour show or whatever. Okay, great, we're out of here. Well, now we've opened the door, we've conjured it up, and now we got to go.
And
what happens to the family that's still there, or the entity that's been like, I thought you gave me hope. You know, you wrote me a letter or something. Like a prisoner gets a letter, he gets hope, and then you stop writing.
I think it's total disrespect to the entities and the spirits that are out there trying to get their stories out and giving them something. And that's why I call them ghost hunters. Those are ghost hunters. What Keith Age and all of us do are investigators. We do the research. We look at it. We make sure what we got is debunked or not debunked.
And well, that's what we used to call, when we were doing the ghost hunting events where we would take people around, we called it ghost exploration. We didn't want to use the word hunting because I just think it's a negative, and I know the networks love that, and you get
hunting, you know, hunting is for killing,
trophy killing, you know,
like look at my deer on the wall. You know,
it's like, you know, eat it, at least eat it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. I think that's why a lot of the stuff that I'm doing, because like next season I'm doing true crime too, and it's a lot of research, a lot of going down rabbit holes, and a lot of trying to find the factual evidence instead of just assuming. Like a lot of these true crime shows that are out there, they just grab it and assume what happened.
We do quite well with my other company, the Haunted Bazaar. I deal with a lot of real true crime collectibles, and I've had I've had Manson's, not Malin, but Charlie Manson sheets.
Yeah.
Now we're going to be right back after this brief break.
Are you looking for a supernatural radio show that is informative and fun? A show with topics such as ghosts, Bigfoot, psychic energy, spirits, cryptids, and more, hosted by paranormal investigators with years of investigations under their belts? Then look no further than The Calling 2.0, powered by the SimCrew. Hosted by paranormal investigator Jerry and psychic medium Valentina, along with others. Tune in Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hey everybody, it's Angel Ray. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Shauna. She is going to be having a new podcast. Sounds like a lot of fun. I can't wait to be a guest on there myself. It's called Exploring the Paranormal Perspective, and you can catch her on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time on Para-X Radio Network.
What happens to a ghost when their home is torn down? No one thinks of the disembodied when they rip down old buildings, dig up cemeteries, and build clean, unhauntable condos. Every year, hundreds of spirits are driven out of their old haunts by the careless living to exist alone with no one to scare. At Para-X Radio, our hosts feel the plight of these evicted disembodied, and we're reaching out to you to please open your heart to one of these lost souls, such as the ghost soldier of the General Wayne Inn or the abandoned spirit cat of Benjamin Rush. So please, please, let a little spooky into your life. Won't you open your house to a ghost without a home?
Para-X.
From the author of the Ghost of Hollywood series and Workplace Spells comes a book for all lovers of pets, Animal Spells and Magic by Marla Brooks. Learn how to choose your next pet according to their astrological sign. Explore animal superstitions. Learn 25 magic spells for your pets and get instructions on creating your own spells. Learn who to call upon and what to use to cast these spells. Include special chapters by Reverend Tim Shaw, Psychic to the Stars Kenny Kingston, Psychic Medium Victoria Gross, Animal Communicator Dinah Roseberry, and Shaman Willie Windwalker Gibson. This is the perfect book for all animal lovers. Animal Spells and Magic by Marla Brooks. For details on how to get your copy of this amazing new book, go to www.schifferbooks.com or check out Marla Brooks online at www.marlabrooks.com. This would make the perfect gift for the animal lover in your life. Go to www.schifferbooks.com or ask about it at your local bookstore.
Hey, I told you we're going to be right back. It wasn't that long, right? Right?
Yeah, we do quite a, well, with my other company, the Haunted Bazaar, I deal with a lot of real true crime collectibles, and I've had Manson's, not Malin, but Charlie Manson sheets.
Yeah.
Letters from Ronnie Fios, DeFios, Amityville Horror Dude, and all this kind of stuff. A lot of it is very disturbing. Like recently, I just I was able to get the it's fit in there.
I don't know, get it for you. That would be great.
Oh, it's I think it's on there. I got the entire files of Amityville Horror Crime Photos. 30 of them.
Wow.
I have to tell you, I have the real true crime photos. It's horrific. What happened?
Gosh, yeah.
And the you know, the children that were shot. It's really bad. So it's really hard to get too much into that. So again, you have to look at it as an investigative reporter, and also how can we help, you know, tell this story and make everybody at peace. You can't fix it. Mm-hmm. Hope you can make it more comfortable for the crossover. You know,
now this is really cool. I'll Chris tell you this story. Yes, will you
find out on that? Yeah.
Okay. That, talk about energy. You probably can't read what it's written on. I'll read what it says. London is on one side. I can't read. And a cell number says 222.
Oh,
look at Now, Chris, wow. You tell this. Is this up for your in your auction?
This is going to be my auction, yeah.
This is going to blow you away. This key, imagine the doors, this opens.
This is from an asylum, Bethlehem Hospital Asylum in England, which is known as Bedlam.
Bedlam Asylum.
Bedlam is the most wickedest asylum in the world back in the Victorian days. I think one of the queens was put in there. They did a story about her. She had a lobotomy and put in there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the, I can't remember which.
From hell comes that.
Which queen? Was it Mary?
Yes.
Mary.
The queens.
Wow. Mary was actually in there. She had a lobotomy in there.
But, you know, this is the just Bloody Mary? The Bloody Mary? Or was
I think that was before then. They were covering up a syphilis scandal with Sir Edward. It's a true story. The movie From Hell covers some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But just without his hair.
There he goes.
And I'm just saying that.
Having fly out of your hand.
Having these things and holding them, which I know we're going to go near the end of the interview about the other situations about haunted items, but having those, I love to feel them and touch them. Not necessarily collect them. I feel like I have them and I can feel the story and the energy, and then we'll tell you the research and, you know, film stuff about it and tell you the story, and then we let it go. But it's incredible to have that kind of history, you know. In today's world, it's like, you know, nothing lasts more than seconds because of the attention span of the average viewer. I'm on my phone, I'm watching YouTube, I'm watching TV all at the same time, and then, you know, like my son looks at me, what happened? Well, you should have been watching, right? Well, I was watching. Now you look down for a minute and he knocked it away. And I'm saying, I understand that's how the attention span is today, but it's so beautiful to get, especially Victorian stuff with his baby carriages or whatever, that held this piece of, you know, incredible depth and energy. And then you feel it and tell the story and bring it back today. You know, I mean, that's been a niche of all our movies. We usually take the real items into the real locations to stir up that energy. Yeah. And so we do the recreations of those stories in the real places they actually happen. So you can kind of imprint the energy. And every show we've done, whether it's that attached, for instance, we could have shot those recreations at a set in Hollywood or something. But, you know, we did an investigation for the attachment. I told you about seeing the SLS. We shot the recreations of her in the actual room. Oh, so it was a very sad event because you just could feel the energy recreating that whole thing of putting the stillborn baby. We had the whole prop made of it. It's an incredible show, The Attached. But we shot it in the real room. It happened. The suicide bomb.
You know, the same with the story of William Gacy's armoire.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. A friend of ours got the armoire, and when he got it, it was locked from John Wayne Gacy's estate.
I don't tell it all and watch the movie.
I will. I'll just leave it at this. When he got up in the morning, it was wide open, and inside with three paintings from Gacy.
Oh, wow.
Oh, the clown. And then what the hell happened after that was so scary. The Attached was a really heavy show for us to do. I don't know if you want to spearhead into the exorcism event.
And I think you wanted to bring that in, right?
I did want to ask you guys a question about your relationships, because you are twins. You've been doing this business for years. Now, we always hear about sibling rivalry and everything, but how do you guys keep doing this for as long as you have?
I think it's I think it's a concept when you realize that, hey, Shay, don't you see, I wish it was two of me, I can get things done. Well, there you go.
I have to tell you what's wonderful is no matter what job or hat that he wears. He's got a lot of hats. Whether it's producer, director, cameraman, music composer, writer, publicist, agent, whatever, you always know that person's doing the job as passionately and as good as you would have done it yourself. And that's the blessing that we have. That's why one of our sub-comedies is called Twin Talk Entertainment, because it's an unspoken language between twins. If you Google Twin Talk, I'll say something, he already knows it. He already knows what I'm going to do. He already knows.
Like if you're on set and you're directing an actor, I say, Mom, you know, and he goes, yeah, she sucks, isn't she? You know, you don't have to communicate, and then you know where you know what to do to fix it. I mean, the funny story is that being twins, we always used to hate being dressed alike, you know, and we'd get gifts from our older brother. He'd give us like the Pink Floyd CD of Dark Side of the Moon, and he'd give Chris one side and give me the other, you know. We really wanted our own identity, and we were fighting for that. But when we made Death Tunnel, we went to Booth Brothers, per se, as in marketing or whatever you want to call that.
Right.
But Ray at Sci-Fi, who bought Spooked, says, we're going to make a movie on a company that shoots a film and horror movie, and the real stuff happens. I want to make the documentary Spooked. And I'm going to market you guys as the Booth Brothers. Oh, God, here we go. Now we're twins again. We no more. And since then, which was 2004, that's what how that came about. But I don't really.
There's not much. I mean, in the younger years, I mean, when you're
ego,
young and stupid, but full of whatever, there's more rivalry and more. What sort of competitive?
Yeah, competitive.
That is, I don't see that at all anymore. Mm-hmm. It's, we got this mission to do, and let's do the best we can do.
I mean, Chris is a wonderful brother, and I couldn't wish for a better partner. What was that? And, I mean,
Zach, too sweet in here, man.
As you guys, you know, we did an interview yesterday, like we do in yours, and we went through our whole library, and like you said earlier, my God,
that's on all of them.
Yeah, you got a lot of movies.
Yeah,
but it really made us realize how we created every one of these.
Absolutely, you have to talk about the BS. I had to go to bed. I felt so tired.
Yeah,
did all this. Like,
you know,
God, I'm exhausted.
And what's so exciting, Sean, is that with streaming services now, we're appealing to a brand new market again.
Yeah,
you know, we have the diehard fans and the people that know us as, say, the Pink Floyd of the Paranormal, if you want to call it that. We have the most epic, legendary, detailed, research-driven, emotional, without pushing ourselves. It's true. I recognize the amount of work that goes into our shows. But since our launch of our YouTube channel, Spook TV, we're getting, 400,000 hits now on one clip. And it's like, we're introducing ourselves at a brand new market that sees us. It's like going to see Aerosmith or something. Yeah. And now all of a sudden, an 8-year-old loves Aerosmith. And you go, and you get to say, well, I remember that back 10 years or 15 years ago, they were my favorite band. And so for us,
you can't really see these chairs. These are actually wheelchairs.
Yeah. We're
in there.
cool.
But I'm saying it's been really interesting to see all these new fans. And saying, well, you got this stuff is great. You know, I see all this other stuff, and it's all it is night vision and talking, and it doesn't go into this stuff like you guys do, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it's been really having a twin brother, back to the question at hand, is I couldn't have done it without him. And I don't think I would have stayed as long doing it. And I don't think our stuff would be as potent. You know,
no, I like working with people too. I mean, I'm not all about solo. It's so much better to try to find, especially even a crew that all can work together, which is hard, you know.
Yes, people. I understand.
So, yeah, I'd like to stay 30 seconds to Mars like 10 years ago than what they are now.
Yeah.
A singer with backup tracks and a drummer.
I think they're down to 10 seconds tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, because it seems to me like we lost something there. And using that, even in the paranormal field, people are not dispensable. People are not interchangeable. When they build a brand together, it's like, you know, Even U2 is saying it now because they don't have the drummer because he has health issues. But they always make sure that Adam bless this new drummer, and he's still playing on the album in the studio. And I think when we start dissecting that and don't understanding that doesn't work, oh, ego takes over. Oh, you know, when Axl was with Slash, and then we just start, you know,
well, the Motley
Crue, those bands belong to the fans. Yes. I mean, without the fans, they wouldn't be the band. And they have to sometimes accept that they are that, you know, they don't do that. And I think we accept that what we do together is what we do together. Yeah. And it makes it the real stuff, you know, and I think that's kind of where we come from.
Well, you two are amazing in that aspect too, because you've got people in the paranormal field that think they're all high and mighty when they came from nothing, and they treat people like crap. But you guys are always so welcoming and open arms and hugs all around, and I love it. You two, I love.
Oh, thank you.
You two are amazing.
I think that people that, you know, thank you. Looking just quickly on that note, looking at people that are starting to think they're better than other people and treat people like shit. You can just really don't even blame them for that, because it's really their own insecurity. They're feeling that their career's getting older, they're dwindling, they've had this need to think that they're really important. So they put that out there. So when I run into somebody like that, I go, well, what's wrong, really? Because, I mean, you putting out that I'm better than you, and obviously you're overcompensating in your attitude. So you really know that they have something going wrong in their life.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's a lot of the things that I see maybe happening, but at the same time, they don't need to be taking it out on everybody else. I've had somebody do that to me. I was like, I'm as nice as can be. And you're going to turn me into a bitch because of your attitude.
Yeah. Well, you realize they aren't worth the time of day anyway. Yep.
That's true. That's very true. Going on into the next question that I had for you guys, as paranormal filmmakers, have you ever gone into a building like Waverly Hills or Ashmore Estates and felt like, uh-oh, maybe we brought something out we shouldn't have?
Mostly, I think what happened to me, I mean, two of them. One was the ex's case.
Mm-hmm.
That changed our life. I think the Attached really changed our life, because when I was doing the I don't really tell many people this. I released quite a few books. I don't even think it's in my book, but when I went down to scout a few times before we actually went down there to shoot the documentary, The Attached, I went into, for those of you who don't know, it's St. Albans Sanatorium is in Radford, Virginia, and it's actually an incredible hospital, mental asylum, and it is a real mental asylum. It's actually larger than Waverly Hills, and I think that's key to mention, because 88,000 square feet is Waverly Hills Sanatorium, but it's 104 square feet is St. Albans. So, but it has 14 real isolation cells in it.
Oh my God. So you can actually go in,
and the door's looking, I mean, oh my God, for art direction is incredible. They're all rotting and painted, and they haven't been fixed up. So you can lock yourself in those asylums, and you can concentrate on channeling or whatever you want to do with it, investigating. I went in there, we did an investigation, and something happened to me that's never happened to me. When you feel a ghost go through you, pretty much that's like a really, like, almost like a shot of ecstasy. You're like, wow. Because it walks right through you. This one didn't walk through me. It attached onto me.
Oh, wow.
And I had video footage of showing me literally going, like, you know, when a chicken goes around, like, with its head cut off. And I was going, get off me. This thing is, you know, like, you know, hanging around me. And then, of course, much later when we went back, things were very different in my life and in my marriage, and everything got weird and dark and different. And then, of course, we were dealing with the exorcism box of Annalise Mikkel, which I know we're going to talk about in a little bit, but that started growing off of that situation, and I ended up in the hospital. And I'm not saying exactly, you know, this is what did it. I'm just saying this is a timeline. Because, I mean, no one can prove that you're getting sick because of this, or it's just natural life in general. Yeah. So I'm not going to be the one and state it's this. I'm just saying the timeline is perfect.
on what happened. So
yeah. Oh man. Well, you talked about the exorcism box. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, I was going to say about the exorcism box. That is a very featured segment in The Attached, and it is frighteningly scary because a lot of people don't know that Elise McKell was exorcised over 65 times, and she was actually possessed by 6 spirits. I don't know if you want to call them demons. You can call them demons because they were definitely evil spirits. But one of them was Adolf Hitler. And I find that very fascinating. They do have that in the Emily Rose movie. For viewers that don't know this, that's the real Emily Rose, which they based the story on Alice McKell. But it was Cain from the Bible of Cain and Abel. And it was Lucifer.
Nero,
the evil guy from Rome. And each recording, which is featured in our film, The Attached, is different. Each voice is different. And we had them all translated. So you get to really hear what was said. And I have to tell you, without saying viewer discretion on the thing, having to edit that and listen to that and go through 200 audio tapes was something that you realize that this poor girl, this really happened.
It was a hard show to do. There's no doubt that having the real exorcism box. I don't know if you want to talk about that now, but
yes, we can do that now.
Okay. You're the captain, so anyway.
You're more than welcome to go into that now.
Well, when it arrived in a trunk, and I had gotten it off of the niece of one of the priests that was at the exorcisms, who knew the father, the Annalise's father, and the other two priests that were there. And when they both died, the parents of Annalise McKell, and their house burned down. This thought that it was vandalized and it was arson. Because, you know, they called her a witch. She was known as the devil woman. So anyway, I had gotten the box to a priest from that, and then it arrived, and I was afraid to open it.
Oh God, you know, I would be too.
I know, but at the same time, it's a symbol of good,
right?
You know, an exorcism box of Catholic crosses on it and a crucifix inside it with holy water and everything. So that is supposed to be what you're supposed to turn to when you find evil. So when I realized that, I opened it up and I put rubber gloves on, which was kind of silly because that's not going to protect me, except for maybe mildew, right? So this incredible energy came out of the box, overwhelming, like a really, like, you know, like you, for those who have done ecstasy or drugs of that nature that change you right away, it was like that feeling, but you're not on drugs, you're not high. And you went, oh my God. And then suddenly the internet router above me blew. That just blew up. And I felt this feeling of accomplishment coming out of the box, that what was meant to be happened and was okay. Because she wanted to die.
Yeah.
You know, bringing that box in and then realizing all the history, and then also working on, you know, the Exorcist file and the Possessed and all these very three dark shows in a row, I think the manipulative energy and the just the overwhelming darkness created a lot of issues around here. And that's why I was really happy to recently send it off to Zach Bagans Haunted Museum.
I bet that was something. Did he call you on that, or
I'm not sure how it happened. I know that I decided to get rid of it because, you know, first of all, I'd seen something in the basement, and that really when I was married, but we were getting ready for a show, and I came up to tell my ex-wife, and I don't know what to say, but I just saw this skinny black shadow, but also apparition of what looked to me exactly like Annalise McKell running across the basement. And I just came up really shaking and saying, this is too much, man. This is too much. I want to get rid of this thing now.
So, but we kept it till we finished the movie. And then we had to take it on the road because it was like a trying to, sort of like a PR for the film. And not
if people wouldn't come up. I think you might have been in one of the shows when we had there. People didn't even want to come up and look at the actual exorcism box with the holy water and the brush and the crucifix with the melted candles and the original candles that were lit in her bedroom when they did the exorcism. You know, never mind the exorcism diary, which was next to it. But then people would take pictures and they would come back and I would say, let me guess, your photo's blurred, right? So how did you know that? So everybody's telling me they're taking pictures of this. And
not all the photos, but a lot of the photos were blurred. But I thought it was time to, because after that, you know, it was all those things going on. And then I got divorced and my life changed, which I'm really happy for, you know, both her and me, where our lives went, because, you know, I am who I wanted to be now. But it took that darkness and that incident to shake me up. And either you sink or you go higher. And I chose to go higher and it wouldn't let it get a hold of me. But at the same time, I didn't want to hang on to those objects anymore. And who better else than the master of macabre, you know, who's into the dark and a museum also. Okay, I have it and I, you know, donate it to somebody. Who's going to be able to see it anymore? It's a part of history. It is. It's, it's like a powerful historic relic.
Would you put
like,
in the London Museum or something? I mean, the six copies were in the Vatican. We got a copy of that diary, took a paranormal group everywhere. They kept that boy in the original Exodus story. And that was quite a journey. And when Zach said, he has a number 100 attraction,
In America
and in Vegas, people should have the ability to go and see this.
Yes.
You know, we make horror movies, and those are two of the keyest props of a horror movie, Emily Rose or The Exorcist. And we've done all we can do with it, and it seems silly for us now not to let other people be able to see something like that. So it was the right fit at the right time, you know?
You know, Zach was, to me, the perfect one because... Yeah. He had the most power for you to be able to see it from now on at a reasonable price, because I know he charges for the museum, which is fine, overhead stuff. But he was excited about it, and he was very respectful. He was very nice. We talked many times before we decided on the situation, and he told me what he wanted to do, and it sounded great. He said, I'm doing a new Exorcist exhibit down there in my room. So he made a whole new room for us. We're gonna go in there, the lights are dark, and you're gonna go in there, the doors are gonna close, and then the lights dim off, and you see the exorcism box of Alex McKell with her voice
that recording
recording of her ex, and then the exorcist diary, and then this clips and audio videos of the history that we talk about, and it's featured as, you know, kind of like the exhibit, you know, started by us, but you know, done really well by Zach Bagans. So I thought it was the perfect thing. There's a few people mentioned.
Well, that concludes the first part of the Booth Brothers interview. Thank you guys so much for listening. Tune in next week for part two. Until next time, don't forget to hit that like button wherever you like. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you want to see the live show, you can do that Sundays at kick.com/geeksparanormal. Thank you guys so much and have a wonderful rest of your week. Oh, and don't forget to tune in next weekend for the Arkansas Paranormal Expo. I'll go more into that next week. Until next time, bye y'all.